Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
Snap back, Daniel Jones. Pressure, Mack. Pressure, throws. Incomplete and a throw over the middle. And a late flag is thrown. No time on the clock. Offensive pass interference.
The game is over.
Too black, right down to the bone on this one.
We need to be better offensively. We have to score more points. Didn't happen, but for our defense to be able to hold these guys at the very end now for two games in a row, we like that. You know, we're 2-0. We're not dwelling on being, you know, feeling like it's a tale of two halves. We're 2-0. That part we like, but we do know we have a lot of improvement too. So there's a lot of good and bad in this game.
We're a hungry team, and we know what we're capable of. To play four quarters, and when you play really well in the first half and put up 17 points and then don't put up any points in the second half, I think that's a little frustrating. So there's just, we have a little higher expectation for what we're trying to do on offense this year, and but you have to be happy with the win. I mean, it takes special teams, offense and defense, and it was a great team win. So we battled through and we're proud of that, but we still have a ways to go, and we know there's definitely areas where we can continue to get better. And
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. The Bears unbeaten. Yeah, that's the headline. But it's also kind of a meh.
Good morning, Mully.
David,
happy
how
Monday.
Are you?
It's a victory
happy Monday.
Monday. Yeah,
to you, sir.
Bears are one of 10 2-0 teams in the NFL, but it doesn't really feel like they are at the point where we want to throw out the term juggernaut yet. I think we're a little bit of ways away from that. Another victory where you celebrate the fact you didn't lose. But I'm not sure there's a whole lot more to celebrate. They revealed some things in the second half that are concerning. And I guess the bottom line is, yeah, they won. But the opponent wasn't one that you're going to see each and every week. The schedule gets tougher, and you'll take it. But you have to have higher standards than that.
It's very strange that you're left feeling like the defense was lacking on a game when they allow 13 points, right? I mean, it's a standard to keep under 17, and they met the standard, but only just, and when you see a team drive down to the 10-yard line for the final play of the game, it's hard to walk away thinking, God, are they dominant?
Well, you're right, because you had a young quarterback that's kind of a turnover machine, and you saw him turn the ball over in the first half. And what you feel like when you have a defense like the Bears that you have seen dominate offensive lines like that before and take advantage of young quarterbacks like that before, you don't expect them to give up 95-yard drives with the game in balance. It's still kind of undecided. So that is the formula you've got to follow. Your defense has to carry this team, Mully. I think we all understand why. And through 2 weeks, I don't think that they have gotten to the point where you feel very confident about them doing that.
They ran the ball well again. When you look at the numbers at the end, they ran the ball for two straight weeks, and you should feel really good about that. And they started the game extremely well on offense, put together a great drive, and you should feel good about that. But ultimately, you're kind of left wanting. When all is said and done, you look at pretty much every aspect of this game, and you're kind of, listen, they won, and you want to keep reminding yourself it's a victory Monday. You know,
right.
We are celebrating a victory Monday here on The Score, but again, it just feels lacking. Somehow it feels like the turn of the schedule was more in favor of the Bears than the Bears were in favor of the Bears.
And it's because of the way that's you're exactly right. But it's because you went into halftime feeling like this was going to be one of those games where you end up feeling very good about yourself and a lot of things you're able to work on. You're up 17-0. The Giants look like a team that is going to, you know, go away in the second half. They're without their best player, Saquon Barkley. They're without a top receiver, Sterling Shepard. And this is, you're playing at home. Fans or not, you're still on your home field, and you have a veteran defense. And then in the second half, you know, the offense hits a standstill. The defense gets a little bit tired, maybe. Was it a fact that they were, you know, just they wore down, their conditioning a factor? I don't know where to point the finger, and I don't know how to explain it fully, Mully, but I think that we saw a different team in the second half than we did in the first, and that should be of concern to Matt Nagy.
The Packers absolutely crushed the Lions 42-21. The Vikings are winless. They fell to the Colts 28-11. You saw Kirk Cousins throw three picks in that game. The Bears' next opponent is Atlanta. The Cowboys rallied to take them down 40-39 in one of those, like, explain how that happened type of games. The Chiefs won in overtime. I mean, listen, we can go through the schedule and find teams that are certainly significantly more disappointing than the Bears. And yet, when you kind of get to the bottom line of it, it's a paper tiger 2-0, right? Of the 10 teams that are 2-0, the Bears kind of, you just kind of wonder if it wasn't the turn of the schedule. Here's hoping. I mean, get another win. You know, stacking victories is what it's all about in the NFL. Teams make a big jump from one week to the next. I never felt they were going to lose the game, but right, I felt like they could be in a tie and heading to overtime. I mean,
well, I have to say, I wasn't sure they were going to lose the game, but I'm with you. When that flag dropped at the end of the game on that last play, I wasn't convinced that it was offensive pass interference, and I wondered for a split second whether or not Eddie Jackson got there a little early. You have to look at then you take a step back, like, that came down to the final play, and these are the Giants, and the Bears will only play a couple other teams on their schedule that are sort of that bad. You know, they've got the Panthers on the schedule, they've got the Jaguars who are feisty on the schedule, and they've got the Lions again. Other than that, Mully, name a team that's going to be as bad as the one they just beat or the two that they just beat. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, any member of the NFC East, that is a bad division, isn't it? Isn't that like a really weird kind of – I get it. Dallas came back, and they're even on the season. But, man, it's just – there is just not a lot to hang your hat on. By the time all is said and done, maybe the last-place team in the NFC West would be the top team in the NFC East. It just felt that way. Injuries all over the league, and certainly we saw, as you mentioned, a terrible one for Saquon Barkley. That's why he was out. It looks like he blew his knee out, and the ACL will keep him gone for the year. So we won't be questioning his toughness because he got himself injured, and there were injuries up and down the line. Anybody who was a fan of the San Francisco 49ers is going to be choking this morning.
Yeah, you know, it was a really tough day in the National Football League. You saw some big names go down. And here in Chicago, Saquon Barkley, you know, on the play before he injured his knee, Mully, you could see him use a stiff arm, and it looked like he had hurt his wrist and injured that. And they were looking at his wrist on the sideline for the Giants team doctors. And then he went back in the game, and when he'd used the stiff arm on that run, I thought he had re-injured the arm or the shoulder or whatever. And then it was his knee. And just really unfortunate because I think he's an exciting player. He's good for the league. And a lot of teams in the NFL losing the war of attrition. That's why, you know, you look at the Bears, and that's what Biggsy wrote. We'll talk to him at 6:40. But he said, yeah, the Bears may not feel good about being 2-0 and their offense, et cetera, but at least they have their health. And that is the way a lot of teams may feel this morning in the NFL.
No question about it. All right, baseball news. Weird weekend in baseball. I don't know what else to say about it. You saw the White Sox drop 2 of 3 to the Cincinnati Reds, losing 7-3 yesterday. Dylan Cease, what a bad pitching performance for him. He lasted 3 innings. He didn't allow a hit, but he walked 7. I mean, that's just, you know, he had been living on the edge. We talked about that, sort of that razor's edge. I think you got to rethink some of the baseball ideas you had heading into the playoffs after watching that. And the bullpen was pretty bad as well. And the Sox just struggled. They had a good game Saturday, attack of the solo homer. They had 5 of them and won 5-0. But, you know, pair from Tim Anderson. But ultimately, I think that you come away looking at that weekend sort of like a missed opportunity. There was one piece of good news, which we'll get to. The Cubs, I mean, wow. I mean, you were out there pulling that victory through the birth canal. You made it happen on Friday.
Yeah, that's
right. 1-0 victory, because that's the way apparently they're going to win based on the results over the weekend. 2 runs in 3 games. Kind of a miracle they won one.
Yeah, the way they're hitting, and we'll blame Zach for that one because he came back on Saturday to do his job and the Cubs stopped hitting the last 2 games of that series. It's really mystifying. Hey, that's cool. And, you know, the offense continues to be too inconsistent. And, look, they face good pitching, and the Twins, they needed to have the kind of weekend they produced after, you know, their week in Chicago. You know, they did not have a good series against the White Sox. But the Cubs, you know, they go head into the final week of the regular season with some real concerns about their batting order. David Ross shaking things up again, trying to get somebody, you know, to come forward and get hot. But, boy, it's frustrating to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no shame in, Berrios beating you. That's going to happen. He's a hell of a pitcher. But I don't know. You come away from that game feeling like all the moves you make, everything you're going to do, how much impact is that going to have? I mean, if you're not hitting at all, and they really didn't hit in that series, it's hard to win. I mean, the professor had a great performance, and they won on Friday. But, boy, it's just upsetting to see 2 runs in 3 games from a team with the back of the baseball cards with some of those guys. I don't know why it's not happening this year, but you certainly want it to kind of activate before you get into the playoffs, that's for sure. We're heading into the final week of the season. We know the White Sox, their magic number is 4, I believe, in terms of their victories and Twins losses, and they've got a big series against the Indians. Could that be a series that we'll see again here in the playoffs? So something to play for and concerns all the way around. And then, of course, the Cubs get the Pirates, and then the teams close out against each other on the south side. So with any luck at all, I think the ideal would be for those final 3 games not to matter, for everybody to kind of have their position sewn up and be able to line up pitching. But who knows at this point? It's hard to say given the form.
You hope that they're kind of treating it as the preseason to the postseason in a way, and getting your staffs kind of aligned and getting your hitters back in rhythm. For the Cubs, as bad as the offense was, I think some of the worst news over the weekend concerned Rowan Wick. He may not be able to pitch again this year. And when you look at that bullpen, which has been really pretty quietly very good in September, Rowan Wick is a guy that you thought you would be able to count on. The loss of him now, you see somebody's got to step up. You don't know who that's going to be at the back end of that bullpen.
No doubt about it. We talked a little bit about the NBA bubble. You heard from Kevin. The Lakers up now 2-0 over the Nuggets, and the Heat 2-1 over the Celtics. I don't know how much the bubble is firing people up, but those are pretty closely contested games all said and done.
Did you see Anthony Davis yesterday? I mean, that'll fire you up. I mean, when he takes a shot and hits a 3 – under those circumstances to win a game, that is like, wow. That's one of those wow moments that gets a little bit overshadowed by NFL Week 2, but that is not to be overlooked. Anthony Davis in the clutch again for the Lakers.
Bryson DeChambeau bench pressed the U.S. Open. He was the only golfer to shoot under par. He was a 6-under, and he won that thing going away.
Yeah, that was, by the way, the U.S. Open finished yesterday. Did that seem like it was an afterthought in a lot of ways? And a lot of people, I wonder how much they paid attention to it. It was a great performance, though, and it's just one of those things that kind of, if everything else going on, you almost forgot it was going on.
All right, we're going to get to all of it. We got the pick six. We have football crisis, baseball panic. There is a lot going on this morning. Shocking to have any kind of crisis when a team is winning, but that's where they leave you. We'll talk about it next in the pick six. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's pick six with Mully and Haw.
where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Are the Bears lucky to be unbeaten after Sunday's 17-13 victory over the New York Football Giants, or are they a pretty good team that has worked the schedule to their favor? And what does Vegas think given their underdog status next week at Atlanta?
Yeah, they're underdogs at Atlanta by what? The field goal you get for being at home? I thought that might change with the pandemic, but apparently not. Are the Bears a good team? Well, they're better than the teams they've played because they've won those games. But are they a good team? Unfortunately, that question remains. I think we'll learn more about them next week. The say what you want about Atlanta, and boy, Dan Quinn's seat is as hot as any in the NFL. I mean, the Bears, the experience of playing the Bears underscores that maybe you're going to get fired this season. Thought we saw that with Matt Patricia, and probably see that with Dan Quinn. Joe Judge is in his first season, so they'll give him a year. I'm that's just being cruel. I think the Bears won games they're supposed to win. They didn't do it in overwhelming fashion, and they leave us wondering how good they are.
I think that Vegas is listening to Matt Nagy, and he says that they're just an okay team right now. He was honest, and I think he's seeing the flaws that exist. They are 2-0, but they are two wins against the two of the worst teams on the Bears' schedule. So I don't know that you can pronounce them a good team yet. I think a lot of it's tied around their offense. It's too inconsistent. Even yesterday, you know, you looked the first half and you felt pretty good about the Bears at halftime. You felt pretty good about the quarterback position. And then the second half, Mitch is 5-10 with two picks and you know, 31 yards. And it's too tentative. And I don't even think it's with the approach. We'll talk about this more later, but I think it's more with, you know, too careful. How often did he try to threaten things downfield within the structure of the offense? Too concerned with being good, and you forget about trying to become great. And that is the problem with the Bears offense right now. Defensively, there are probably a host of issues, but I think they're closer to being a good team. But right now, no, the Bears are 2-0, but I think it's with an asterisk.
Pick six!
Do you feel Allen Robinson was in any way distracted or impacted by his week of contract unhappiness with the Bears? And did he have a good or a bad game?
Well, it's not a good game by his standards. I mean, there definitely is not the kind of game that you want to have when you're trying to prove to the world that you are an elite number one wide receiver. We know that in Chicago. It was a bad time for him to have a subpar game because of all the distractions. And you do start to wonder if he was trying too hard. You know, the interceptions were both intended for him. Mitch stared him down on the first one, and it was a deflection. And then the second one went through his grip, but the defensive back made a terrific play on that. You would like to see A-Rob be a little bit more himself, but it was not a good, productive day for him. No two ways around it. He wasn't a big enough factor against a team that the Bears really should have had an easier time and scored more than 17 points against. So I don't know if it's related. I think it's fair to wonder. It's a fair question, and I imagine he will answer it. He didn't talk after the game that I'm aware of, but it was not a good game by his standards.
Yeah, Allen Robinson targeted 9 times with 3 receptions for a total of 33 yards, the longest of which was the diving catch he made for 17 yards, a patented catch for Allen Robinson. It means that Mitch, I don't think anyone else was targeted more than 3 times in that game. And, it, you know, Mitch is obviously looking to and for Allen Robinson. And, look, if he doesn't make that big diving catch, they don't get that first touchdown. So I understand the importance of the player to the team, but something was up. You know, they really did share the ball. And, I mean, how about that? How often is it that Bobby Massey will have more catches than Anthony Miller? That is a real strange occurrence. And really, Anthony Miller's got to have – he's got to play better than he did, frankly. He dropped a touchdown pass. But yeah, you know, there's a lot going on. Here's hoping they get this done. They're rumored to be negotiating, and they want to get it done. So hopefully they get his contract status sorted out before Sunday. It'd be nice to see happen, but again, we're going to have to wait and see.
Can you
miss. Pick six.
Where are you with this Bears defense? Are you seeing hints of a return to 2018 status, or are they too uneven at the end of games? Is that a conditioning issue? And would things have been different if the Giants hadn't lost their two best offensive weapons outside of their quarterback?
Yeah, that's the big question you come away with, is what would have happened at the end of the game if they if the Giants weren't under full strength. So I think that helped the Bears defense. I hope it's conditioning. You know, you saw Robert Quinn make that strip sack to kind of get things started for the Bears there. They take the lead, and then they immediately get the ball back and again, end up going up 10 to nothing. It should have been 14, but there was a drop touchdown there. I thought that he obviously made a huge impact immediately, and you get a hint of what you're looking for. But I didn't think that, they came away with some sacks, but I didn't walk away from that feeling like those four sacks really were the game deciders. You know, the Giants managed as many against Trubisky. So it was strange to feel dissatisfied with that defense. They were all back together again, but it does have to be conditioning, right? We haven't seen a full week of practice yet from Khalil Mack or Robert Quinn, and I imagine that gangs up on you. You know, we know that Akeem missed a day with illness. Was it Thursday, maybe? So that's a prep day. It's an important day. You need those guys back, and you need them kind of influencing the game a little bit more. I think that this team looks gassed at the end of games. That defense, two straight weeks, where you wonder if they just can't get their conditioning together because of the nature of no preseason and the strange practice schedule.
Looked like it was going to be a long day for Daniel Jones. First snap, Robert Quinn has a strip sack fumble, and he's like, okay, that's the way it's supposed to work. And then by the end of the day, you're like, what? Where is that? Where'd that defense go? And the numbers are a little bit deceiving when you look at 295 total yards by the Giants, and the Bears did have four sacks, and they did have, you know, a couple takeaways. So they're not terrible numbers, but I think the eye test, you just expect more from this group because it's a veteran group that you've paid a lot of money, and you're playing a team without two of its biggest weapons and one of the best running backs in football, and yet there wasn't that dominant factor. There wasn't that intimidating kind of disparity that you expect to see when the Bears play the Giants at a young quarterback. So maybe it is conditioning. It better be, because these are players that should perform at a higher level, and you do expect more. Even though they only gave up 13 points and 295 yards, somehow you walked away feeling like they should have they can play better.
It's a pick six.
Did the White Sox control issues on Sunday, including seven walks by Dylan Cease, impact your feelings about the playoff rotation? What did you think of Garrett Crochet, and do you want him on a playoff roster?
All right, I'll start with Cease, because that's what Steve Stone was talking about last week when we were debating the third starter in a playoff series. Walks will kill you in the playoffs quicker than anything, and I just think that will be the factor and the reason they put Dane Dunning ahead of Dylan Cease, who still has good stuff but really needs to command it better. I loved the Garrett Crochet debut. I mean, who didn't? Who can't get excited about that? Yesterday, again, he goes back and he throws a scoreless inning. He's got two outings, and who saw that coming? I thought maybe in the back of my mind you could see him maybe doing it, but that, oh, maybe why would the White Sox do that? The service clock, he's a rookie, blah, blah. He was drafted in June. Oh, my goodness. Can he play a role in the postseason? Absolutely. Did you see his stuff coming off the mound? I mean, how many times did he go past 100 miles per hour? So absolutely I would want him on the playoff roster. This could be a guy that gets some big outs in huge games in the postseason. Bring him on.
Yeah, you know, I thought Dylan Cease, you know, he has been walking this razor's edge. And by walking, I mean he's had control issues to the point where he has loaded the bases. He has had guys in scoring position, and he's got out of it. And I understand that when you look at him, if you're a scout, you see all the upside and you see how promising a pitcher he is. I understand that. But right now, it would appear as if Dane Dunning will, without the same stuff, give you a better outing, right? He'll make the most of what he has in a better fashion right now than Dylan Cease is doing. So in my world, Dunning has moved ahead of him in my playoff rotation, and I want him to be the guy on the bump for that third start. I don't know what to make of some of their pitching stuff. I definitely want Garrett Crochet on the playoff roster because I think he can be an unbelievable weapon. I mean, the guy's throwing 100 miles an hour. He's got a good slider. I think he's looked really, really sharp, and you see why they drafted him when they drafted him. And I know people have talked about Chris Sale in relation to him. I think he's not quite the stick man that Sale was, but he obviously has a great arm. And I think that you look at that and you say, could that translate into a rotation piece down the line? So maybe that's why you're hearing a Sale conversation. But, man, Garrett Crochet fired me up. That is some – I mean, how many he all of a sudden he's like throwing some of the fastest pitches in Major League Baseball.
That is a pick six.
Should the White Sox give Tim Anderson the final week of the season off because of his hamstring being cramped up, is it more important to have him ready for the playoffs or to win the division with the magic number of 4 with 7 games to go?
Well, he's more important to the team in the playoffs. You can't really imagine them having success in the playoffs without him starting things off. So make sure he's healthy. I don't think you give a guy a week off because he had a hamstring cramp or whatever they were describing it as. It tightened up on him. Whatever the issue is, you want him at his best. If you have to sit him down for the week, then go ahead and do it because it's more important that he be at his best in the playoffs than even positioning for the playoffs. So I'm all for doing whatever's right for him, but I wouldn't give him a week off just for the sake of it.
I think you want him sharp with his batting eye going into the postseason. I think you want to trust the player in this situation. He will know his body better than anybody. I just hope that when he does get his MRI, if he does on his hamstring, that he's mic'd up.
Pick six! Wow!
That was very entertaining on Saturday.
Yes, yes it was.
Was David Ross pulling Kyle Schwarber for being too lax in playing a triple an overreaction or inappropriate response? And how do you feel about the Cubs losing 2 out of 3 to the Twins, including a Yu Darvish start?
Well, the Cubs can't hit. We got into that. I might be the only guy in town. I don't know. I didn't like him pulling Kyle Schwarber. I thought that David Ross was the guy that wasn't going to nitpick when he had his veterans kind of do things like Javi Baez not running hard to second base or after what he thought was going to be a flyout. And then he's going to pull Kyle Schwarber, the hardest working player in that clubhouse on national television because he misplays a triple. I get that he misplayed the triple. I get that he was maybe a little too lax. But really, you're going to take that move now because you want to show that there's playoff urgency? If there's playoff urgency, then explain afterward that you're going to hold your players accountable. I just didn't like it. I thought it was an overreaction. I know the Cubs will be ready. David Ross has had a great season as a manager. I just didn't like that move.
I had no problem with it. I think you set a standard, and you got to meet that standard, and Schwarber didn't. So he was lollygagging, and that's not allowed in baseball. So go ahead, overreact to a triple. I had no problem with it. I also think he's got a good enough relationship with Schwarber that he won't have to worry about any fallout from that. So it's a way to remind everyone else, hey, get yourself in gear here, or I am going to embarrass you a little bit. I didn't really have a major problem with it. I don't advocate embarrassing guys, but to me, the bigger problem was not being able to score against the Twins because this is the problem. You're going to step up in class. We keep waiting for the Cubs to just sort of start hitting to the back of the baseball card, but the fact of the matter is the pitching they're going to face is going to get a hell of a lot better. So the whole thing is a concern, to quote John Fox. All right, we're going to bring in Brad Biggs next. We will talk to our man about what he saw, where the Bears are at. Are we holding them to a standard that's unfair by being disappointed when they're not dominating? We'll ask Biggs that question next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Brad Biggs. Biggs time. Biggs. With Mully and Haw. Biggs time. The Biggs Report. With Brad Biggs. Biggs time. Biggs. His name is Brad Biggs. Brad Biggs talks football with you.
He is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. Brad Biggs joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Big day!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you're on it. You you have the story always. I got to tell you, it was interesting to see the Bears beat a team they're supposed to beat, and the way they did it was a little disconcerting. I get it. They're 2-0. I get it. They're healthier when so many teams are dealing with horrible injuries. But goodness gracious, can't they make things a little bit easier on you?
Yeah, they didn't earn a lot of style points Sunday afternoon at Soldier Field, but NFL standings don't have a column for those, at least not the ones that I pay attention to. So very, very fortunate to be 2-0, off to a good start with the victories over a couple teams that were not expected to be very good and don't look very good. And they've got time now to fix some of these areas that don't look great and get better before the schedule turns a shade more difficult. And they're going to have to be better at an 0-2 Atlanta team next week, with the Falcons putting a ton of yardage and a ton of points on the board, but defense being optional in Atlanta. So the Bears defense is going to be challenged a little bit against the Falcons. Certainly a heck of a lot more than they got from Danny Dimes and the New York Giants yesterday.
Brad, it's good to see you yesterday. You know, we watched Mitch Trubisky in the first half look like a polished passer, and I feel like at halftime with 139 passer rating, 2 touchdowns, really pretty efficient performance. They were up 17-0, and then the second half happened, and we're describing his performance as uneven. What happened, and how do you explain the continued inconsistency from the quarterback position?
Well, that's sort of, you know, who he is as a quarterback, or at least who we've come to expect him to be. They were very good on third down in the first half of that game. They were 7-for-10, and then I think they only went 2-for-6 there in the second half. So that was probably part of it. You know, that first opening drive of the game was really something that you love. They took more than 7 minutes. It was like 7.5 minutes off the clock. They went 12 plays, and they get a touchdown on the opening drive, something they only accomplished twice all last season. And they were sort of methodical. They were hitting some third downs on that drive. It wasn't like they were, you know, getting big chunks all the way down the field until the kind of outlet pass to Montgomery, where he weaved his way into the end zone. So I would say that third downs tripped him up a little bit there in the second half against the Giants, but they just didn't seem to execute. It's not like the Giants suddenly, you know, solved them or suddenly got a pass rush going. There wasn't much of a pass rush from New York the whole game, but they just weren't quite as crisp.
When we think about the identity that Matt Nagy is trying to form, they did run the ball again. They put together 2 weeks of pretty good statistics in terms of their running totals. What are they? What do you see as the identity of this offense?
Well, I think they're I think it's kind of shifted from an offense which was heavily based in the shotgun to maybe a mix of 50-50, depending on the opponent and the week and how the game goes, of shotgun and under center, which gives them an opportunity to get Mitch Trubisky in some really nice play action situations. And we saw some of that look pretty good again yesterday. Some opportunities to get the outside zone running game going. So I think they're they want to be more physical than they were a year ago, and two games in, it looks like they're starting to accomplish that goal. I don't know that we're gonna really know the identity of these guys for another, say, month or so. I think six games is probably a good snapshot of who a team is on each side of the ball, but they're working toward that. And what was one of the questions we brought up last week after their trip to Detroit? Well, they committed to the run against the Lions. Can they do it again next week? Because you haven't seen the head coach want to do that all the time. And he checked that box. They did that yesterday, and they did it well. So now can they do that in a trip to Atlanta?
Brad, the Bears raised some eyebrows before the game with the news that Tariq Cohen had signed an $18.25 million three-year contract extension, includes more than $9.5 million guaranteed. Number one, why now? He's coming off what is kind of a subpar season, and you wonder what the impetus was. And secondly, were you surprised because we expected all of the contract extension talk to be surrounding Allen Robinson?
Well, the team's going to multitask and try to get multiple things done at one time. And I'm not surprised from the standpoint that, early in his career, Tariq Cohen switched representation. He changed agents. So that put his new agent, Drew Rosenhaus, in a position where he had yet to, get any money that he could collect from Tariq to get paid for the work that he's doing. So by Cohen now having a new contract, Drew can get his percentage cut on that action and get paid for the last, say, 2 years of work or so, maybe even more than 2 years. Cohen left his original agent relatively early in his career. So that's probably a factor that would not cross the minds of a lot of folks and something that's in play there. Was Cohen trying to negotiate a deal without talking about last season? Because last season, as a punt returner, he was fantastic. But offensively, it was not a good season for him. The Bears pay him good money. It's an awful lot of money to pay a gadget player and a premier punt returner. Hopefully, he can have some really effective games this year where you get to the end of the game and you say, geez, look at that. Cohen had 85 yards of offense, and I'm just throwing a number out there. Yesterday obviously wasn't one of those days. He did not do a whole lot. He actually didn't even play a whole lot. I don't think he had 30 snaps on offense, and they've got a lot of guys they need to move in there. But five carries for 12 yards and one catch for 15 yards on Sunday for Cohen. His time will come, but that's a big investment in a guy who, if you've got a well-oiled machine on offense, your undersized gadget running back's probably your fifth or sixth option, right?
Yeah.
I look at their defense and you see a ton of room for improvement, and you think they've got a level there where they can improve. When does that kick in?
Well, hopefully getting Robert Quinn on the field yesterday is the start of some improvement. My goodness, that first play from him. I'll tell you what, you saw a difference between 94 this season and 94 the previous four seasons. And Leonard Floyd, you saw a professional quarterback hunter coming around the corner there on the third overall pick in the draft this year to hunt the quarterback and get that ball out. So with Quinn needing some time to maybe get up to speed, he had 25 snaps or so in the game yesterday, guys, with more than half of them coming on that final drive of the Giants that they ran out of time, really. It's not like the Bears stopped them there. So hopefully he'll get a little bit better. But, yeah, some more concerning things yesterday, especially when you consider New York's without the best player in Saquon Barkley when he goes out on the first play of the second quarter. They lose their best wide receiver to an injury in the game, Sterling Shepard. And they didn't go all over the field on him. They only scored 13 points, but some eye-opening things. When you've got an undersized Deion Lewis running right up the middle to score on fourth and goal from the one, that's not something you're accustomed to seeing this Bears defense allow. So definitely some stuff for them to continue to work on. And while the pass rush was better yesterday and you look at the numbers and it shows you four sacks, it didn't look to me like they got the kind of pressure that you'd hope for against New York's offensive line, which, guys, that's one of the five or six weakest units at the position in the league.
Big Z, thank you. Great catching up, buddy.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great day, boys.
All right, we're going to bring in Tom Thayer next. We can bounce around inside Tom Thayer's head. Always a fun thing to do. We'll talk to Tom next. Mully and Hall on the Score.